Let's talk about this plan of yours. I think it's good, except it sucks. So let me do the plan, and that way it might be really good.
Wow.
Hello, and welcome to It's Good Except It Sucks, a movie-by-movie and television series-by-television series hurtled through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This time, we're taking a look at The Marvels, released in November 2023, when you could have saved cinema from being entirely devoured by the multiverse by going to see Terrifier 2 instead. I'm Tim Worthington, and we'll be finding out what I made of The Marvels shortly. Meanwhile, joining us to give her thoughts on The Marvels is writer Anna Kale. Anna, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me in various publications, on podcasts, and sometimes on the radio, talking about film and TV. And I'm always usually hanging around on social media as well. My biography of Diana Dawes is still available to purchase in all good bookshops.
Okay, I don't imagine the biography of Diana Dawes would have prepared you much for the next question, which is, Anna, what happens in The Marvels?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure I can answer it, really. I found it a little bit confusing at times. There was a lot going on. It was fun, though. Kind of light and frothy and enjoyable if I didn't actually always know what was going on at any given time.
Well, I think I know the answer to this question already. I know that you know who Carol Danvers is, because you have been on here talking about Captain Marvel. But Anna, how much do you know about Monica Rambeau or Kamala Khan before you saw this?
Absolutely nothing.
I'm not surprised, to be honest. And I'm also not surprised you found it a little confusing in places, because re-watching it, I thought there were one or two things which are related to the continuity of the films and the shows that weren't quite explained properly. But I'm just wondering, first of all, what you found most confusing about it.
It was the presence of characters. I wasn't sure who they were. I had a kind of awareness of Ms. Marvel as a concept, but had never obviously seen it and never kind of seen that character. And so the introduction of that new character really early on in the film, for me, was a little confusing. I was trying to kind of try and understand where things fitted together. There was a little flashback not far into the film, which really helped with some of the other stuff. But the Ms. Marvel stuff for me was quite bewildering, I think.
Yeah, because obviously we had already seen, well, as a child, Monica in Captain Marvel.
Yes.
But I think this underlines what went very slightly wrong with the whole sort of setup of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which at first I thought was quite an exciting idea, which was that prior to this, I mean, I won't bore you too much with the details, but they used to have longer ongoing series like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like Daredevil, where sometimes elements from them would cross over into the films, but it was more the other way round. Something that happened in the films would then be explored in more detail on TV, or a character like Lady Sif in the Thor films would show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while and that sort of thing. But they decided to do, when Disney Plus started up, sort of mini-series introducing new characters. And the problem was, nobody saw them. Not because, you know, the popular perception is, well, nobody has Disney Plus. It was more that people didn't have time to sit down and watch, you know, 8 or 9 new shows. There might only be 6 episodes each, but it's a bit sort of bees in the net bag, really. You know, how do you keep track of them all? And I think, you know, that's because obviously there was the Ms. Marvel series, there was Monica. I think this wasn't explained in enough detail here. Monica became Monica Rambeau, the nameless superhero, in WandaVision.
Oh, okay. I had no clue.
Well, they don't really give you, she refers to what happened, but there's no real flashbacks to that, which is weird because it was written by WandaVision's writer. I mean, there's a whole sort of very strange production background to this, where it was pushed back a couple of times. There was supposedly extensive reshoots that nobody's quite sure about that. And I will say as well, there is a deleted scene, I'll come back to this, that explains something a lot better than something that happens later on. But I can see exactly that it would be confusing. And also, it's a reference to The Blip, which I'm guessing you were thinking, what is going on? What are you talking about disappearing and coming back?
This is going to be a recurring theme of our conversation, where I say, no, I didn't understand that bit.
Well, that was basically in Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, which Captain Marvel played a huge part in. Long story short, half of the population of the entire universe was sort of blinked out of existence by somebody who was trying to establish universal harmony, and they brought them all back. But obviously, Monica's mother didn't come back because she was one of the ones who wasn't blipped. See, it's confusing me already. It's difficult to explain, but I'm wondering what you thought of Monica and Kamala, though.
They were really good characters, and I think when the three of them were together, it was really a lot of fun, you know, those kind of character interactions between those three. And yeah, it kind of felt right, you know, the three of them on the screen together. They had good chemistry. The characters themselves, I found the Ms. Marvel character a little bit irritating at times. Is that really controversial to say? I don't know. People are going to hate me for that, but she was just a bit... Is she supposed to be annoying?
She's supposed to have that element to her, because I think this didn't really come across in the Marvels. It certainly didn't in the series, but basically she is a kind of annoying fangirl.
Yes, yeah, I got that vibe from her, you know, yeah.
All their fan fiction and their comic strip art and so on. And I think it didn't play that up enough, and maybe she seemed a little more just plain irritating because of that, rather than somebody who's bothering the superhero world. And I will say as well, I don't think it's helped that... Sorry, this is real kind of deep state stuff if you don't know what we're talking about, but it's been changed from Kamala originally in the comics was an Inhuman, who I'm sure you're at least aware that the X-Men exist. And the X-Men yes. are sort of... Essentially, I know it's changed a bit over the years, but like mutated humans, where originally it was due to atomic tests and so on, and they're sort of outcasts and a metaphor for racism and so on. And the Inhumans are descended from the Kree. They're seen as a bit more aspirational, high society, what Kim Kardashian might want to be. That's swapped as well. And I'm not sure that that really helps in this context. Not properly, until something that comes in later in this, introduce the X-Men yet. Monica, they've changed her background. Originally, in the comics, she was a harbour detective who sort of came into the path of a smuggled weapon and became able to transform into the electromagnetic spectrum. And in this, it was just Wanda the Scarlet Witch cast a spell and she walked through it, I think, three times in total. And that happened. And I don't know what points I'm driving towards here. I'll be honest about that.
Yeah, I think it's obviously that, you know, those characters and kind of including them and kind of that little bit of missing information that could have put, you know, the whole jigsaw in play.
And we also get Nick Fury, who I think you're probably a bit more familiar with.
Yes, I am, yeah. Yeah, it's nice to see him back. I quite like him.
Well, I've got a lot of time for Nick Fury. What's interesting here is they've completely skipped over the events of a miniseries supposed to lead into this called Secret Invasion, which was not good. So I wonder if the reshoots were pretending that didn't happen.
Well, we've all had times like that, haven't we?
But I would say overall, I think there weren't enough... When I say recaps in this, I don't mean big, you know, montage with loads of clips. I think there was a little too much assumption that people would know what was going on. And I think maybe that's a small part of the reason for the very strange response it got. I'm guessing that you will probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, obviously, I didn't really pay too much attention to the reviews and things and kind of that react, but I could tell there was a kind of flurry of reactions which were not necessarily positive to the film. I found it entertaining, as I say, you know, even with those little bits of kind of confusion and not quite known, but, you know, it was fun. And, you know, you always want to encourage people to go to the cinema to see a fun film, you know, and yeah, maybe they could have done more to help the audience who may not be as familiar to kind of feel comfortable watching it.
I mean, that's true, but at the same time, I think when people go off at the deep end about that, ignoring the fact that you don't get things explained properly in the Meg 2, you know, which is hardly high science. I think it's really just, like you say, if something is an entertaining film and it's enjoyable and it's exciting, and like you say, people should be encouraged to go and see films out in the cinema. And I found it very odd that, I mean, there was the whole problem that it did come out during the Screen Actors Guild strike, so nobody could promote it. And there's been a very odd response from Disney, who have basically said, well, we didn't interfere enough, and have been awful about Nia DaCosta, the director. You know, you've had the head of Disney basically saying, oh, she didn't know what she was doing, almost. And I appreciate it probably wasn't meant like this, but when it's a situation where you've got a lot of rich white men picking on a black woman, even if it's not because of that, that does not look good. But I will honestly say, I think one of the reasons people are taking against this is because it's not just a female-led film, it's a three female-led film, and two of the leads aren't white. And, you know, Kamala is a divisive figure anyway, because, you know, Monica's been around since, I think, 1980 or 81, but Kamala, I think, is from about 2013 or 14. And Barack Obama was an early fan, which, again, sets a certain kind of people against her. I think we have to talk about, regardless of any other criticism that people might have of it, we have to talk about that as a really important factor, because I think people pretend these sort of attitudes don't exist anymore, and they really, really do.
Yeah, and I think people probably formed their opinion before they'd even seen the film, having those kind of opinions ready to mount. You're right, you know, it is very much a female-led film, female director as well as the cast, and I think that will inevitably anger some people, you know, for no reason.
As well, let's not forget the villain is female, Zoe Ashton playing Dar-Ben, and also not white, so it's going to trouble the Tucker Carlsons of this world, I think.
Yes, definitely, and so should it. I'm happy that it exists, and yeah, that's part of the conversation.
I will say, actually, she is always really good value because she's so good at playing characters that you just don't like. When I say just, I mean not, you know, you hate them, but you could almost like them. But there's something about them that makes you think, yeah, but I can't like her, no matter how sympathetic the villain might be. And I think that's a real skill to pull that off.
Absolutely. And she's a great actor, and I've loved her in lots of different things, you know, lots of different types of film as well. And yeah, kind of, you know, through my notes, I refer to her as moody. She's quite a character. I quite liked her, quite different, and just always seemed to be completely, yeah, in a mood with everybody.
And like you say, overall, it's a really exciting action film. There's some really funny bits. I mean, I burst out laughing within the first minute when Kamala says how difficult it is to draw hands in a comic strip. And there's the yeah, when they're trying to work out, because the whole thing is, I'm assuming people will have seen it, listening to this, but just in case they haven't, whenever they use their powers, which are all very similar, they sort of swap physical places, and the reason for that is what Dar-Ben's up to. But when they're trying to control that, they're skipping and walking with books on their heads and so on. That is a brilliant sequence.
Yeah, everyone loves a montage, obviously, and yeah, that's a great little sequence. That it was a lot of fun. Like I say, when the three of them together, it works really well, I think.
And the other bit I really liked was when they went to Aladna, the water planet, where everyone communicates by singing. And the two bits that really got me there were when they're being introduced to the royal court, and the herald says, three new faces, one could be more cheerful, looks at Monica. Yeah. And also, when they're all processing along the street and Kamala's dancing like she's at a wedding, but Monica's basically doing sort of Andrew Collins secret dancing, like, I am moving very, very slightly so no one can detect it.
I love those scenes when they arrive there and you kind of realise what's going on. I was thinking, is this going to turn into, you know, Mamma Mia 3? Nice, hot, sunny place, singing and dancing. And I was thinking it was going to go full on musical.
I do think it's interesting that it took this long to come out, though, because apparently it wrapped early in 2022. And when you consider that, you know, obviously, you know, there had been the first Captain Marvel film. She'd been sort of at the forefront of one of the two, not just one of the two big team-up films, one of the biggest box office films ever made. And also, she was considered important enough to... She makes a cameo appearance in Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. So, obviously, Captain Marvel's got that high profile, but it's taken this long to come out. And I can't quite figure out why, because there doesn't seem to be anything that went particularly wrong during production, despite rumours that people have been putting about. I mean, Nia DaCosta is a relatively new director, but her main credit before this was the Candyman reboot, which Tiona Paris, whose Monica actually was in. So I'm just not sure quite. I mean, I know they have had, let's just say there have been quite a few problems recently with some Marvel films. And this was swapped with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania in the release schedule, which may have been an attempt to get that out of the way. Let's just say that. But it's quite odd that for a character that prominent, that it's taken this long to get round to a sequel. At that point, I think it was a bit like a runaway train. I think for various reasons, things have slowed down a little since then. But I don't know, really. I think it's fitting it around again, maybe why those miniseries weren't a great idea after all. They had to be made and shown first, because actually Ms. Marvel ends with the post-credit scene, which appears early in this, where she swaps places with Carol. Set up like that, I think, is a bit of a mistake, really, because you're beholden to something you're doing somewhere else and people seeing it somewhere else. And I'm not sure that that is that good an idea, really.
No, they kind of box themselves into a corner there, don't they? Because like you say, the timescales, then, you know, are inevitably going to shift if there's an expectation that these other little bits and pieces need to be put out there and seen first, then yeah, inevitably you're going to have that gap and you lose momentum perhaps as well with, you know, the character or the success of that first film by waiting for those things to happen and assuming your audience or your potential audience has seen them.
I will say that turning that completely on its head, that I was delighted that I thought Kamala's family would just, you know, just make an appearance in one scene and that'd be it. And, yeah, you know, I loved them in the series. So to have them throughout it, commenting on it with her mum basically just not wanting to hear the actual facts of anything, having just made their own mind up, even though it's like aliens racing through her house, you know, saying like, oh, so the door broke itself. Just the way she would deal with her children. We didn't get everyone. We didn't get her school friends or Red Dagger, who's a sort of teenage vigilante in it. But she does have photos of them on her wall. So I do hope the cast got, you know, a bit of money out of it. But I adore the fact that they were in it so much because I love them, and I love the fact that maybe people who wouldn't necessarily watch Ms. Marvel got to see them literally in action, because they do clobber some bad guys as well, usually with plates and things like that.
Yeah, I loved her family. They were great. I was delighted every time they kind of showed up on screen, actually. They were really funny, and it kind of makes me want to watch a little bit of Ms. Marvel, actually, to kind of see them a little bit more, because they were great. I loved her parents, and it was her brother, wasn't it, the other character? Yeah, it was great, you know, them sat on the sofa. There was a line her dad said that kind of tickled me, where he says, is Captain Marvel pressuring you in any way? You know, this kind of like parental kind of guidance stuff, just like that normality of a teenage experience seeping in amongst the action hero stuff. I thought that was great.
And when he tried to sell insurance to one of the Sabre employees as well, who turned out to be several centuries old.
They were great value, really great characters, actually. And yeah, it was, yeah, it added to the fun of the film having them present as well.
Come here, kitty.
Attention, Sabre crew. Stop running and let the Flurkins eat you. You will be fine. Attention, Sabre crew. Stop running and let the Flurkins eat you. Stop running. Begins
tomorrow. And we did also get, of course, the return of Goose with,
yes,
several more Flurkins as well.
Yeah, absolute highlight for me. Yeah, I kind of really relaxed into it when I realised Goose was going to be in. And I'd be like, you know, a bit of a major plot role. One of my favourite cinema characters ever, not just in, you know, these films, but yeah, absolutely in the top 10 for me.
One thing to do with Goose, though, that does seem to divide the people is in the scene with all the Flurkin kittens running around. When I saw it in the cinema, memory got a huge laugh. And when it's appeared on streaming, people appear to have... It's interesting, the reaction, given that it wasn't that big at the box office, since it came on streaming, there's been a lot of, oh, right, yeah, just watched it now. Yeah, it's really good after all. But a lot of people saw it, and that seemed to be taking the stance that memory was too on the nose a joke. And I wonder if that's the difference between cinema viewing and home viewing, is that some things are made for a big communal experience and they can seem very different when you're at home, maybe on your own or half doing something else at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you say, that kind of group experience of seeing in the cinema, it only takes one or two people to react. And yeah, that kind of can be echoed across the cinema, can't it, in terms of people thinking, oh yeah, you know, they're able to react too and feel comfortable to do so. And yeah, I think there is a difference between watching the cinema and watching at home, particularly a film like this, which, you know, it would have been great if I'd seen it on the big screen. I think that's always preferable, particularly a film with such a visual element to it. I think it would have had a very different impact visually for me, kind of watching it on the big screen rather than on TV. And like you say, those other little nuances just seem to work better in the cinema.
And we also get Goose making coffee, which isn't that obvious, but it's a great gag. But that does bring me around to something that I'm going to imagine you were quite baffled by, which is actually explained in the deleted scene by Kamala messing with some controls on the spaceship, which is when they need somewhere to take the refugee scrolls, Valkyrie from the Thor films appears and offers to take them to safety, and it's almost like she just like comes in from nowhere, like we expect to know who she is, whereas obviously Kamala accidentally contacts her. And so am I right in assuming you probably thought, who is this and what is she doing and why is Captain Marvel sort of not quite trying to not flirt with her or something a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, looking through my notes, there's yet another note that says confused here. So, yeah.
Valkyrie is from Asgard, is one of Thor's associates. And although they've been very coy about how they've shown it so far, Valkyrie is varies in the comics between bisexual and gay, but they have tried to represent it. And should we say Carol Danvers is just a little bit omnivorous, is the best way to put it. So, you know, they do have that very sort of forced something went on their interaction. But, I mean, if you hadn't seen any Thor films, that must be very perplexing. And obviously something at some point during some screening, they thought that bit with Kamala talking to her on a video link is slowing things down. It has to go. But I think they should have replaced it in some way because at least it gave some exposition and background. I sound like I'm being really down on the film. I really enjoyed, but... from this perspective, I do see these things a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, for someone like me, who, like you say, you know, hasn't seen those other films or other kind of elements that are kind of brought together on the screen, it can be hard to kind of understand what this sudden, you know, like you say, person on the screen or an event or kind of referring to something that might have happened before. It can be a bit tricky to navigate. To be honest, you've just got to relax into it and just, you know, accept that you're going to have that confusion. But actually, ultimately, that confusion didn't really impact on my enjoyment of the overall film. It didn't impact on, you know, the kind of the nuances and the plot. You know, I could kind of follow it pretty much, you know, the basic stuff of what was happening. So it didn't impact negatively, I don't think, that kind of element of confusion. But I found it amusing, I think, after a while, because it just kept coming up, that thing, oh, right, okay, another person, I don't know who they are. And just kind of, yeah, I just had to relax into it, really.
And as well, there were so many elements, you know, that carry you past anything like that. Because I just, looking down my notes, I've got so many things highlighted as I really funny bit, like Kamala saying, if this is all top secret information, why is it on a clear case? Which is something I've been wanting someone to ask, you know, since pretty much is the first Iron Man film. It's like the way in things like CSI, where you have sort of secret plans being outlined on a massive screen that everyone can see. Well, how is that? How are you avoiding people knowing that? But I love that. I loved, you know, during the very intense bit of Monica and Carol reading each other's minds and finding out what actually happened with Monica's mother and so on, that Kamala sees her as a little girl and says, it's not you, Monica, you're so cute. It's completely undercutting that moment. And it's just frustrating that if there was that little more in the way they used to get right all the time, just that little bit more attention to people who might just be coming to it as a film that's on after the Graham Norton show, just a little bit more awareness of spelling things out clearly to them, I think would have elevated it from a 70 out of 100 film to an 80 or 90, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there. That's how I've seen most of the films in this series, is when they just happen to be on and I happen to be in the room and you don't turn over, and then suddenly, you know, you're watching it and, you know, you're being entertained by it. Yeah, I'd agree with everything you said there, to be honest.
I have to be sort of absolutely clear, though, that I sound like probably like I'm picking holes here. I'm not at all. It's just coming from the point of view of, you know, as I've said, a guest who isn't really familiar with any of these characters. But I absolutely loved it. I enjoyed it much more than, well, Secret Invasion, the series that leads into it. And, you know, I actually enjoyed it more than a couple of the recent films, actually. I thought it was fun. That's the whole point of it. And so I cannot understand. When they say the negative reaction it's had, I don't think it's been from the public. I think it was from critics. And also, a lot of people weren't aware it was out because obviously it wasn't being promoted, because, you know, they weren't promoting it because they were fighting for their right to get paid in the media.
Yes.
And honestly, I think anyone who I've heard from who has seen it said, OMG, this is brilliant. And all of the criticisms I've seen seem to have been people saying, obviously I won't be watching this, but I think that. And you can't do that. There's an extent to which, you know, for example, you could say, I'm not interested in something from what I know about it. I don't think you can actually make a quality call based on that. Like, I wouldn't personally necessarily listen to a Coldplay album. I think I know what to expect from it, but I cannot judge whether it is a bad or a good Coldplay album without listening to it. If that makes any sense at all, I think I know what I'm saying there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think some sections of the film criticism community are never happy with anything. You know, they're ready to criticise. I think, you know, the key is this film and films like it finding their audience and entertaining people. And, you know, it was a really fun film and really entertaining. And, you know, I don't know what's more important than that, really. I mean, I know to some people they're really into the detail and they, you know, they really want it to fit right with the whole kind of, you know, universe involved with these films. But, you know, speaking as someone who's coming at it from a different angle, you know, it's an entertaining film that, again, you'll watch if it comes up on TV eventually after Graham Norton. You'll sit down and watch it like you would with the others. Just you might, you know, think you're a bit overtired when you're watching it and confused with the bits and pieces you don't quite understand.
So, I mean, it's difficult to say on the basis, as I say, that she isn't really presented as the fangirl in this, but did you identify with Kamala at all? Because that seems to be quite a common reaction, really.
Yeah, kind of. Like I said at the beginning, you know, I did find her a little annoying. But yeah, she was a fun character, you know, and I think taken as a whole, that family were great. And I think I actually got more from her as a character when she was with her parents and with her family than perhaps when she was on her own. And I also enjoyed her when she was interacting with the two other women as well. And, you know, them making their team. There was that bit where they were making their team name and trying to decide, which I found really entertaining, where they were trying to decide what their team name was. It's a bit like, you know, that pub quiz scene in The Office where they're all kind of choosing their team names and they're coming up with these random ideas, or you kind of hearing the ridiculous names. It's those kind of interplays that I think she really added value to as a character. I liked the age gap as well. You know, I liked the difference in age. I thought that was great as well, because you get those slightly different perspectives as well from those three main characters. So yeah, you know, she was all right. She grew on me, I think.
Well, I really liked Monica rejecting all her suggested names, because it is a long-standing thing that Monica, the comic version, just wants to be Monica Rambeau, and other people sort of impose names on her for various reasons at some point, some of which Kamala suggested. I love that, you know, they turn that into a great joke, really, where she's not having any of it at any point.
Yeah, and this is the thing, you know, you said this earlier as well, there were some great jokes, you know, there were some great little moments as well. Yeah, the comedy of the film, I thought it worked really well, you know, those little elements, and actually, yeah, kind of added that little bit of extra humour. You know, for me, sometimes these films can be a little serious. I really, very much appreciated that this one wasn't, and was just, you know, an enjoyable experience.
And right at the end, we get two scenes that I'm going to be interested to see exactly how you've reacted to them, because I can imagine they seemed like good and exciting scenes without it ever being quite clear what was going on. The first being in a direct send-up of the post-credit scene from the first Iron Man movie, which genuinely I would say was a game changer. It was responsible for the modern culture of post-credit scenes. When I saw that, people were halfway out of the door when suddenly there's Samuel L. Jackson in Robert Downey Jr.'s apartment saying, "You think you're the only superhero." And here we get Kamala confronting Kate Bishop, the new Hawkeye from the Hawkeye series.
Oh, is that who she is?
Yes,
right, okay,
yeah,
thanks.
But basically, I'm lucky the pizza dog we get as well, eating some pizza, which I'm really pleased by, telling her that she's putting together a team.
Yeah, it's all went a bit Ocean's 11, didn't it? You know, with like George Clooney putting together his team. That was, yeah, interesting. And I kind of thought, all right, I don't know who that person is. But actually, the idea of that was amusing. But yeah, I had no idea who Kate Bishop was.
Well, it's great to see them finally do that, because they brought in through the back door a couple of the young Avengers into various things. Like they mentioned Ant-Man's daughter in it, America Chavez, who's basically another dimension's Captain America but is Latin American, and although they've not done it on screen yet, is gay. So, you know, she's a contentious character as well for a certain kind of audience. But they've appeared, there've been a couple of other potential ones. So the idea they're actually doing the Young Avengers now, take it from me, honestly, that is quite exciting. They both played that scene really well. Again, you know, you mentioned the age difference thing, the idea that, you know, Kate's in their early 20s and Kamala I think is supposed to be 16, 17, and just in a couple of lines they nailed that age difference as well.
Yeah, it adds nuance to it, you know, and those relationships, and yeah, I liked that actually.
And the other mid-credit scene that we get, I'm wondering if you had any idea what was going on at all. Monica wakes up somewhere, sees her mother who does not have a daughter. Can you actually explain what you saw?
No, and I think my notes just say, what's going on? And then Kelsey Grammer. I think that is literally all my notes say for that one. Yeah, I was like, all right, whatever. I need a cup of tea now, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
Well, I mean, what was essentially happening there is for a long time, they didn't have the rights to the X-Men. Not only the X-Men, they couldn't say mutant in anything, which is why the Inhumans rather than mutants appeared in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and that sort of thing. And they now have the rights to them. And there've been a couple of nods towards, I mean, Patrick Stewart was in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, sort of playing Professor X from, well, we don't know what reality it is, but, you know, he was there. There've been a couple of other nods towards it. But Kelsey Grammer as Beast, that is the first indication that they are actually going to reuse the original cast in some capacity, which is quite exciting. And the next thing that's been announced is Deadpool and Wolverine, which will mean nothing to you, I'm sure, but they're both from the original X-Men films, and you've got Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman teaming up, and the poster is a sort of, let's just say they don't have a love-hate relationship, they have a hate-hate relationship, and the poster is two halves for Lockett with their masks on. So obviously they're going to bring everyone in through that, and that is quite exciting. But is it exciting to anyone that doesn't understand what's going on and wonders why LaShawn Lynch is playing somebody called Binary instead of Maria Rambo?
It all became a bit of a fever dream, to be honest, with the credits scene. So yeah, that absolutely was peak. None of this makes sense, but you know, who am I to judge?
But overall, what would you say about Marvels?
I'd say it's light and frothy and entertaining, and I enjoyed watching it. You know, it was a really solid little film, and yeah, it was a good experience for me. And I think, you know, thinking about the reactions from other people, I don't tend to listen anyway when people start down that kind of path. So yeah, I was happy to make up my own mind about it and enjoy it for what it was, really.
Okay, well, there's only one thing left for me to ask now. Anna, if you had light-based powers that made you swap places with two other female superheroes, what would you use them for?
I would somehow use it to get some help around the house. It'd be lovely if I could just swap places with a couple of people.
I think that would be nice. Did you see what happened to the Khan's house when they tried using that?
It would be an improvement on mine, I'll tell you.
Frankly, I don't want to know. Anna, thank you, and Excelsior.
Thank you very much.
If you've enjoyed this, don't forget you can find more editions of It's Good Except It Sucks and plenty more besides, including details of my book Keep Left Swipe Right at timworthington.org.